Kia ora and welcome to this episode of the Amateur Austenite. I am Frances Duncan, an author and the founder of the Jane Austen Society of Aotearoa New Zealand. My co-host is Emma.
Hello.
Today we're discussing Chapter 7 of Northanger Abbey. In Chapter 7, the brothers arrive. James Morland is very taken with Isabella. John Thorpe is very taken with himself, his horse, his carriage, and the sound of his own voice. Catherine wants to like him because of his relationships with Isabella and her brother. One of the great things about actually pretty much all of Jane Austen's novels where they've got cities that exist, she talks about real places, real street names. Obviously, she herself has been paused at this street unable to cross where Isabella and Catherine are.
It's extremely vivid and she's talked about it for long enough that she must be really pissed.
I think she's poking fun of the parties of ladies, however important their business. But then the things that she lists don't seem that important. They seem a little frivolous. Pastry, millinery, young men. But given the limitations put on women during this period, what would count as important business?
The business of women who are not in the class of Catherine Morland.
Which they would think was not important because they are so much below. It's just a washerwoman.
I think the washerwoman will be risking their lives to get across that road. Not so worried about the state of their muslin.
Women of a certain rank weren't able to have any important business then. I meant of the higher rank.
Well, they sometimes would. You know, a widow would have important business. Financial business.
Sorry, whenever I hear about widows, I always think about them having affairs. What does that say about the books?
Maybe you'd get your man of business to come to you if you were dealing with your deceased husband's estate. So maybe you wouldn't need to cross the road to get to the bank.
We get a pretty fitting introduction to John Thorpe, a most knowing-looking coachman with all the vehemence that could fitly endanger the lives of himself, his companion, and his horse.
We also hear that he's of middling height. In our group, we had a discussion about Jane Austen and the height of heroes. You can tell who's a hero and who's not based on their height. Henry Tilney is tall. Mr. Darcy is tall. Mr. Collins is short. John Thorpe is of middling height. You think Jane Austen might have had a thing for taller men?
It was in Mansfield Park that Mr. Rushworth kept talking about the fact that Henry Crawford was not tall. If you were a gentleman, you tended to be taller than people of lesser status because you had better nutrition, for example, therefore you were able to grow taller. So it could be that because tallness was associated with rank, therefore it would make sense that the heroes would be tall because it's not just about how they look, it's about their status in life that makes them attractive as well.
I want to see a height versus income graph and make your choice of future partner because you can estimate their income based on their height. A statistical method of husband hunting.
Isabella refers to Mr. Morland and my brother. Note whose name comes first. Mr. Morland and my brother, he's there too.
So is this the first that we've heard that James Morland and Isabella already know each other?
When Catherine meets them, they refer it, they go, oh, she's excessively like her brother.
So there is a prolonged passage here where John Thorpe is deludedly claiming that the distance between Tetbury and Bath is 25 miles when it is in fact 23 miles, and he's doing it to make his horse sound faster. And then he is big noting about his carriage and how much he paid for it when he bought it off a friend. This carriage, I'm gonna give you a description of it. It's curricle hung, seat, trunk, sword case, splashing board, lamps, silver moulding, all you see complete. The ironwork as good as new or better. Better than new. This is, to my mind, a young man describing his car.
I think he would be a boy racer.
He would totally be a boy racer. And he is just talking up anything to do with himself. And he is, I say deluded, advisedly. He's telling lies, which he seems to believe himself.
Which, as we discover later in the book, causes a lot of issues, but it's kind of his MO.
Although, actually, I have spotted he doesn't believe it. So he's just been claiming it's 25 miles at the beginning of the chapter, 25 miles between Tetra and Bath. And when Catherine notices that his horses are very hot and they might want to rest, so perhaps he doesn't want to invite her on a drive tomorrow, he says, rest. He's only come 3 and 20 miles today. So he did know all along.
There's a similarity between him and his sister. Isabella does the same ploy later, referring to time. I refuse to believe anybody that it was X amount of time. Well, actually, I suppose he is doing about distance and time.
They're just not interested in fact. Their own belief is, to their own mind, more plausible than fact. Measurable fact.
There's a line I think that could sum up the entirety of Catherine's character. Had she been more expert in the development of other people's feelings and less simply engrossed by her own? Basically, she'd see what was going on around her.
So she is 17.
She's 17. I apologise to any 17-year-olds who are listening. I know when I was 17, I thought I knew everything too. I still don't know everything.
So here is the bit that I promised you. Catherine asks Mr. Thorpe, have you ever read Udolpho, Mr. Thorpe? Udolpho? Oh, Lord, not I. I never read novels. I have something else to do. Example of what only two chapters ago Jane Austen told us about people who run down novels, and here's John Thorpe doing it. And then Mr. Thorpe goes on to describe a couple of novels that he has read. Tom Jones, which is pretty brutal, and The Monk, one we discussed in our book group. There's a lot of sex and pretty licentious behaviour going on in The Monk, and that is not a book that a young lady would have read. And it's really not appropriate for John Thorpe to be mentioning such a book to a 17-year-old girl.
Because wasn't it banned at one point?
I don't know.
It's another red flag for John Thorpe. He is full of red flags. He's swearing in front of them. Jane Austen will not swear herself. She puts D, which we assume is damn, which at the time was a swear word. I don't think it counts as one now. But he's swearing in front of the ladies. He refuses to listen to people. He's contradicting himself. He mansplains things. And he's a racist. So that's fun. Talking about the author being married to an immigrant, as though that was part of the reason to not read her book.
And he also tells his sisters they're ugly.
And he does that great thing, a short, decisive sentence of praise or condemnation on the face of every woman they meet. So he's walking down the street with a woman he has just met, and the woman that are walking past him, he's basically ranking them. That one's a 10, that one's a 5. But it made me think of another gentleman in Bath, in Persuasion.
Oh, yeah, the Baronet does that too.
He hopes she might make amends for the many very plain faces he's continually passing in the streets. The worst of Bath was the number of its plain women, out of all proportion. He had frequently observed as he walked that one handsome face could be followed by 30 or 35 frights. And one time he counted 87 women go by without there being a tolerable face among them.
In summary, it would be fair to say that Frances and Emma do not like John Thorpe, and neither does Jane Austen.
Has there been anything in him to like at this point? Everything he's said and done has felt off. He gives a bow to Catherine, but he does it in such a way that it's too much.
Yes, he bows and scrapes. Mm. So I had to look up that scraping. The scraping is the arm. So the bowing is the bend from the waist, but the scraping is the bit where your arm goes down and scrapes the ground.
So it's very like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Flamboyant?
Yeah.
Excessive?
Excessive is a good word. And we see the echo of this conversation about the novels later. Catherine talks about novels with Mr. Tilney, but she's now a little ashamed that she reads them because of this conversation with Mr. Thorpe. But Henry is like, no, novels are great. When you've just met someone, would you really say, no, that thing you love is crap?
Well, you wouldn't, Frances.
Actually, I'm not very good at social nicety, so I might.
Just as well you're not meeting Jane Austen, she might put you in a novel.
When the Thorpes there's a family meet again. As you say, he calls his sisters ugly and says his mother's hat makes her look like a witch. And he gives her a hearty shake of the hand. This is his mother.
I think that's culturally normal. In other Austen novels, to be given a shake of the hand is very friendly and quite an intimate one.
I mean, I guess you don't hug people generally, but I assumed you'd hug your family.
And I also think maybe a handshake is not like necessarily the kind of business person handshake we do now. It's more like a clasp.
John Thorpe is referred to as a rattle, which I actually looked up the definition of. A man from whose mouth information, true and false, flows out all day long without consideration, almost without volition. Defined by C.S. Lewis.
If you think of a baby's rattle, when you shake it, it just makes noise.
That is the best explanation I've ever heard. And you can see that with John Thorpe in this chapter. He is very clearly defined as a rattle. Not only is the word used, but he is just pouring forth noise from his mouth. We can see, Catherine cannot see, that Isabella and John are into each other.
Isabella and James are into each other.
James, oh God. This is also, why does everybody have names that are so similar? James and John and James. Got it right that time. Refers to Isabella as unaffected, without artificiality or insincerity. And that just makes me go, he really doesn't know her. Well, she's played it very well.
Yeah, so I think James is unaffected and unable to see Isabella's affectation.
He does seem so genuine. And when Catherine's like, oh, I'm so glad you came to see me. And he's like, I did kind of come to see Isabella, but yes, I do love you. Which is sweet. John Thorpe would have been like, I am not here to see you. Because he says,
You ugly.
Because at one point he says, I didn't come to Bath to drive around my sisters. They talk about uniting in the octagon room, which is the assembly rooms.
I feel like there is a scene in the Amanda Root version of Persuasion that is filmed in the Octagon Room where there is an Italian opera singer. Is that room not octagonal?
It could be. This is the great thing about Bath, because it's a historic, things get preserved so that a lot of filming for period pieces gets done in Bath because it's got the scenery.
Yeah, and in the actual place that the scene is set.
Just amazing. There's an opportunity to do that this place has been there more than 200 years.
Actually, that 1984 adaptation of Northanger Abbey, it had Catherine Morland in the bath, at Bath, in her bathing sheet with her bonnet on.
It looks so ridiculous. It's really funny. John Thorpe is in that scene. Pretty sure they would have had separate baths for men and women. And he's wearing a hat and also the awful coloured suit. And I think he weirdly looks like a cowboy.
There's no bathing scene in the book. This is how we titillate and excite a modern audience. Less clothes, more bathing.
That is something that Andrew Davies loves, and he is the adapter of Jane Austen.
Well, it was very effective. Well,
I don't think he did that.
I'm talking about Mr. Darcy's white shirt, obviously.
And that is our discussion of Chapter 7 of Northanger Abbey by Jane Austen. I'm Frances Duncan. This has been Emma. Thank you for listening, and we wish you happy reading.
How long do you think we've been running it from Tipperary, Miss Morland?
You ugly. You ugly.